What is up, my metal maniacs? This is the Judas Priest cast.
And we've got another episode coming.
You do.
Here we go. So today we're bringing you a very cool guest, a great friend of mine, and we're going to introduce him right now. Johnny Headline of the Maiden Agency and the So Far So... I'll let you say it.
Many people get it wrong, even after listening to most of our episodes. So far, so far, so what? I guess it's a tongue twister. SFSP, another word for it that I use.
Yeah. Like, I almost back, just said so far, so good, so what? Because that's the Megadeth album.
Right. Yeah, we stumble on that too still. So, I mean, it's easily recognizable in memory or on a screen, but saying it, it's a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah.
So far, so pod, so what?
So that's what? That's it. Yeah, good to be here.
Actually, it rhymes better.
But it was another podcast last time I was on with you. But then, of course, you've been on with ours for like three episodes. One to be released actually in like hours on this time of recording.
It'll be out by the time this episode is released.
Yeah, great to see you, Hattie. We had 5-10 minutes now before the mics went hot. That may or may not be included. Depends on what you do, George. But good to see you anyway. I'm going to say officially on record, because you weren't on when I was on Talking Priest last time on another podcast with George. So good to see you.
That's it. In the old days, we had Jonathan on for Dissident Aggressor. And now it's a pleasure to have you back.
Quite a different tune, right?
Yeah, very. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan, tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world.
Right now, yeah, my world. I've been repeating stuff on my other shows, but I'm not sure everyone that listens now listen to those. So I guess I can repeat a little bit of it. It's the two podcasts running on your network. The one, the tongue twister, So Far, So Pod, So What? The Megadeth-centric transatlantic state-of-the-art speed metal podcast with my good friend Gregory from Buffalo. And then, of course, with Eric here in Stockholm, but usually still via distance, we're recording Maiden A to Z all the time. I think we got soon to be 120 episodes, actually, including the unnumbered ones. We are at 120. I realized I've published 200 podcast episodes just now, which is nice. I started in May 2020. I started 5th of May or something like that. So 200 episodes. I've edited at least 180 of them, I think. So that's cool. Other than that, I'm doing finishing a couple of albums that I started way before getting into podcasting. Like one was 5 years ago, another one was 4 years ago. And none of those bands are officially out there. So I guess I can't say the names. Someone will steal them. But they're coming out. I think one this year and one next year. And other than that, it's just managing life and managing and getting older, all of that. Good stuff, you know?
Sounds amazing.
It is pretty amazing. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. You don't have to die to be a hero.
Not always. Oh, smart line you threw in right there. But hey, let's not spoil anything just yet. Because
True. I mean, the episode headline obviously says Hero's End, right?
Well, you're right about that.
Yeah.
You know, I bet a lot of our listeners haven't even heard this song because it's never been played live. It's at the very end of Stained Class. And, you know, Stained Class has good, sizable following, but not the most popular Priest album by any stretch. Mm-hmm.
Sadly.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I was even wondering by myself, like the other day, when we were supposed to do this one the first time. We ended up doing the Maiden A/C bit on what songs? We did two songs, Out of the Shadows and Only the Good Die Young. That's the one released like hours from now, speaking time. And I was thinking, why the hell did I pick Hero's End? Because I remember being super hyped, like, Hero's End, George, that's the one, we got to do it. And I have rediscovered why I picked it, preparing for today. So that's all good. But of course, I'm not going to drop that now because that's part of the show, so to speak. But I was wondering, why did I pick that one? It's a bit of a weird choice, isn't it? It's a hidden track for sure. But I think someone posted on your Twitter that there are no hidden gems in the early discography. It's just gems. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that was probably a lot of fans out there. That's a good comment. And I agree with him. Just gems.
Yeah.
It nothing's good, yeah. really hidden anymore in the internet era. You can go
That's
and
true.
Listen
Who
to
is
anything.
Hidden from, really? It's right. a good point, actually. It's a good point.
Well, there are missing stuff, as we were discussing, but nothing's hidden. Everything's out there.
Nothing is hidden anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's a double-edged sword. That music is more accessible than ever before. And that's yeah. cool for the fans.
I mean, everything is more accessible, right? Everything that you can fit into a screen, at least, or a screen and a pair of headphones. Everything is more accessible.
So we've got Heroes End, the closing song on 1978 Stained Glass.
Stained glass.
What is
stained glass?
What is stained glass?
What is that,
George?
What is that?
I was about to ask you, what is stained glass?
Yeah, well, I think it's about someone that is not favored by the powers that be, probably. I would say something like that, because the high class usually is, and the low class usually ain't. And stained class, I can't imagine they are super popular among the rulers or powers that be, or society or whatnot. It feels like a fringe group,
outcasts.
For sure. Again?
The outcast of society.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Also, it's just a cool name for a record, I think.
Patty, you like this record?
Hell yeah.
Some really good songs on here.
Let me get started.
A lot of songs that I enjoy more than my pick, Heroes End, for sure. Like Exciter, first speed metal song probably ever. It's a very important track. Or the title track, Stained Glass, is awesome. Invader is awesome. I think you've done that on the previous show, I think.
You did, yes.
Beyond the Realms of Death, obviously, is a classic. That was one of the first songs that I noticed when I got my Best of Priest CD back in the early
It Don't Solo. That's yeah. all I have.
Yeah. And a co-credit on Les Binks, I see now. That's interesting.
Well, yeah, Binks' birthday is coming up.
Is it? That's cool.
April 5th.
He's on also on the
you have
album.
A great memory for these, Hattie, I gotta say.
Yeah.
It's my little brother's birthday, so I didn't forget.
Oh, yeah.
The combination, yeah.
Tell me that. Your little brother cool. shares a birthday with Les Binks. That's cute.
Yeah.
He's on, I think he's drumming on Butterfly Ball, the project from Roger Glover in Deep Purple, which is a very good thing. Also, you get some really early Dio singing on that one. Dio is playing the role of a frog. That he's in character of a frog, and Les Binks is drumming.
What?
Yeah, it's true. Dio is in character of a frog. Check it out, Butterfly Ball. It's not bad. It's really good.
I'm gonna find it and I'm putting in a clip because that's absurd.
Yeah.
I have never heard of it.
He's a frog and he's supposed to go to the animal ball, and then the ball is over, and he's a bit sad about that being over. But also, he enjoyed the ball. That kind of thing.
The fable. Butterfly ball.
Rock and roll fable. Yeah, it's cool. Unless Binks drums, I think. 80% sure.
That is so fascinating. That is so weird that I'm morbidly fascinated and I want to know.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, it's in there in the Wikipedia article you pulled.
Through his connection to Roger Glover.
On the way top of that, in just south of history.
Yeah.
It's
Roger
one of the first
Glover's The Butterfly Ball.
Yeah, it's a cool album. Very short songs too. And you got David Coverdale singing, you got Dio singing, you got...
oh my goodness.
What's his name?
Concept album and rock opera. I've never heard of this. Damn.
Right.
And this was like a whole thing with fucking Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale and Dio. Yeah. That's like a lot of big names.
Yeah, it's great. And I will send credit again to the Purple Podcast, as I often do, because they surely helped me discover this proper. I knew of it, but I didn't know it was as good. And I found it on a nice priced used CD, like a very reasonable price, $10 or something. No, used LP, vinyl. So it's in my collection now, and it's a good one. Of course, Roger Glover also produced a couple of Priest records, right? At least Sin After Sin, I know.
Sin After Sin, yeah.
Yep. Only that, maybe?
There are other Deep Purple and Judas Priest connections, though, because Don Airey has played keyboards for both bands.
Ah, he's played keyboards for a lot of bands. Always good, too.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. A Touch of Evil, which is an insanely good Priest song. And everyone knows the keyboard part in it, the one that goes...
Ah, that's Don Airey. That's cool.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
I almost tried to sing the keyboard part, and then I thought better of it and said, I'll put in a clip.
That can be hard to do. Ah, that's it.
Didn't sound like it at all.
Well, the clip will. Oh, that's it. That's really hard to sing, George. Your defense. It's a cool arpeggio, and I like that synthetic string sound. If you don't try and make it sound like real strings, you just honestly have it sound synthetic. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it rocks.
Yeah, almost makes me wish that we were talking about that song, but you know what? This block of episodes we've been doing lately is kind of about the hidden gems, or unhidden, they're just gems. And Hero's End is one of them. And there's a lot of value in this song, and that's a good reason for us to spotlight it now, because everyone already knows A Touch of Evil and already loves it. They might not know or recognize what's cool about Hero's End.
That's true, George. Actually, I got my turntable fixed just now, or I fixed it. Miraculously, I fixed it. And a friend of mine got this information. He got his hands on it, and he came to me with a new record, and that was Painkiller. So that's my latest vinyl. Very good record.
Damn good choice.
Very good record. I can admit, I'm not the host here, so I can admit I wasn't super familiar with it. There's still plenty of Priest songs I've never heard, even. It is a top band for me, but I don't have the A to Z. Not at all. But I guess, you know, most listeners
don't. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Hero's End is definitely part of it. I mean, weird part. And again, I don't remember if I said this after or before we went on record, but I was wondering why I picked it. And then today, when preparing for the recording, I rediscovered why I picked it. Because it's, it's not an anthem, is it? Not really.
Depressing, almost. It's more of a dirge than an anthem.
Ah, that's true. I like dirges, though.
Well, if you like dirges, then you picked a good song for it. I'll say that.
Yeah. Actually, I don't even mind going to funerals. It's not because I'm crazy or psycho or anything. Like, I enjoy them, but I feel they are very important for me. Super important. So I do like to make time for funerals, and I do, in some capacity, enjoy them. So, yeah, I guess I like dirges. I think... Like anything death or anything despair is very hidden in mainstream society. And then, of course, we pull it out in metal, but that's sometimes maybe more for the show, right? I think it should be part of your brain for sure. The good and
part
the bad.
Part of the human experience.
Yeah, the good and the bad.
Like, this makes us human, right?
Mm.
Or at least like living being, not living.
Some variation of a living being for sure. Yes. Mm.
Well, sure. I mean, there's the duality of it, the whole situation. You are living because you aren't dead.
The undead lives within us, George.
Good callback there. Well, we are here and we're ready to talk about some Priest. So who wants to hear Hero's End?
It's a good choice. Let's do this.
Here we go. We'll be right back.
But anyway, that little intro is a bit odd. It's a bit of an odd intro. It's these big pauses, these big voids of silence, right? And then just striking chords that are not super dramatic either. It's an interesting intro to me. And I've been thinking long and hard today in the bath, like, why did I pick this tune? And I realized, and you're going to hear more of it, it reminds me of Megadeth a bit. It's the only band that this song reminds me of. Of course, Megadeth to come in later, but Dave hugely inspired by pretty much only 70s bands and Iron Maiden. So I think, yeah, you'll hear more of that. The angular approach, the kind of breaks and pauses and the bluesy fills and the splitting attitude. And you can hear that in the intro. I think the only other band I can think of that would do an intro so full of void is Megadeth.
Mm-hmm. And hear it now that you're pointing it out. Pretty cool.
Right.
And I didn't know when I picked this song.
Almost a little bit of hook in mouth.
Yeah, I was thinking, Badano, here I am, Badano. But they have plenty of that. Okay, hook in mouth, there we go.
Dread and Fugitive Mind.
Yeah, good pick. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm a social disease. And that stuff, yeah. Yeah, they do love their pauses. Pauses are cool, too. Mm-hmm. It's something that's been utilized in music since forever. To have that pause, it's a very musical thing to do.
Yeah. Like, I don't remember which song I was thinking about, but the other day, like, I was thinking the pause was as good as the song itself.
Yeah, yeah. There's something super, I guess it could be perceived as very pretentious that... Robert Fripp from King Crimson said, but I liked it. And he said that the music is the celebration and decoration of silence. I like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. He knows what he's talking about. I mean, he's not a hippie or anything, you know.
There's another song we talked about a few episodes ago. We did No Surrender with Andrew Dubrois. And all three of us, we really loved the part at the end, like the very end of the last chorus, where all the instruments drop out and it's just Rob singing the last line of No Surrender. And that pause, that's like everything. And then when they hit back in, it's even more satisfying.
It's a trick as old as time, yet never gets old. You know, it's always cool. I like that episode. And Heroes, Never the Heroes is such a poppy tune as well. I like that, you know. I like when metal bands can make something that is pop effective. That doesn't mean it's a pop tune or anything. It's just that it lends the effect of popular music, which is, of course, great effect. If you're going to hit the masses, you need something strong to go there, right? And I think Priest have more so than any other band of their era, like Sabbath or Maiden or Praying Mantis or whatever, they have been way more focused on reaching the masses all the time. So, I mean, it's a little bit ironic that they are so much smaller than Maiden today, but that's just because Maiden are so good. So that doesn't shade any shadow on Priest. It's just because they're the best. I mean, Priest searching for this, I've actually enjoyed following the search in hindsight, how they try and find the masses all the time. It doesn't bother me, actually entertains me. I think it's a big part of why Priest is so fun to listen to, because they try new things. Okay, it's to get the masses. Reed. It's to get the money, but it's fucking fun to follow either way. Whatever they did it for, it's fun to follow because they're really good, all of them, at what they do. And they have the right team to put it together. It's fun to follow. And I think they did that a lot, especially after this record, really. That's when they started really chasing the masses, you know. And then Never the Heroes, or what was that other tune? A short song on Firepower? No Surrender, yeah. It's so good. It's just so good. It's pop. It's pop metal, like, really perfected by really old men, too.
Oh, that's the history of metal.
I mean, like, dudes in their 30s. In melodic death metal bands and stuff, they try and do this, but then the masters show up and just do it way more like hooky.
Rob is a singer's singer, man, and he is into pop singers, and that's what he grew up on before metal was a thing. Like, that's what he was listening to on the radio.
Right. It's been circulating images, been circulating now lately, images of him and Dolly Parton, and every time I see them, I feel so good. Because Dolly Parton is such a fucking boss. She's done, so like, she's written some of the biggest songs ever to be written, and people don't even know it most of the case.
Yeah, rumor has it that she wants
absurd level of talent, absurd level of talent, and to see Dolly Parton together with Rob Halford enjoying themselves on the stage. It's so good. It's like, that's why we do music.
Yeah, rumor has it that she asked him to sing on her rock album that she's writing.
Yeah, I think it's confirmed now. I think it's confirmed this is happening pretty much anyway. You know, if the project is indeed released, Halford is on it. I think that much is sure at this time.
As well, he should be. That's fucking awesome.
Like, I'm not kidding. It's Beethoven stuff, Dolly Parton. She's on that Beethoven level, you know, Mozart or anything like that, only in a way different expression. But it's a super honor for for Halford, I would say, you know.
I would say too.
That's right. Huge.
About some Hero's End, though.
Yes. Let's continue.
Yeah, isn't that delivery so cool?
Wasted.
And I was noticing that too. He just draws out the underground.
Yeah. I want to make a cover recording when I play this in style of Megadeth, but it's going to be a lot of work, but it's kind of worth it because I can totally hear this, but it would be a completely different rhythmical arrangement of it and melodic too. He can't sing like Halford, obviously. Like, he would be the first to confirm that statement. But it reminds me of either Megadeth or Sabbath, actually. It's quite a Sabbath-y part. Like Volume 4, Master of Reality era. The only thing it doesn't
remind me of. It sounds a little reminiscent of Sweet Leaf.
Yeah, it's the chromatic runs when you skip across every key on the keyboard, so to speak.
That's another song that has space between the instruments, although Hero's End definitely is faster.
Pretty killer groove here. Yep. Also, if you listen to Binks, our friend from the Butterfly Ball, if you listen to him, he grooves nicely. I mean, this is the follow-up to Sin After Sin, right, George?
Correct.
And on Sin After Sin, they had one of the best drummers that ever walked the earth. In Simon Phillips, for Les Binks to come in, and I feel a very smooth transition. This is probably my two most listened to Priest records are these two, and it's a very smooth transition. I almost thought it was Phillips. I mean, now that you said it's not, I can totally hear that, but really good. Like, it's a bit nerve-wracking if you pick up after, you know, a for hire studio professional fucking drummer in Phillips, and you're just coming in like, here's me. So well done on his part. It grooves nicely.
Yeah. He has the jazz background. Les Binks, he is excellent. We don't talk about him enough on the pod, but he's on this track. So now we are. Les, we love you.
Yes, we do.
Typical of me to bring up the drummer.
Someone's gotta.
Yeah, I love drummers. You know, no secrets.
And hitting back on what we said before with that atypical word delivery that Halford loves to do.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
We know Dave Mustaine, he's a king of that too. He'll say the word however he wants to. He doesn't have to pronounce it the normal way.
So rhyming now with Israel. Now rhymes with Israel, apparently, right? Something courtesy of Greg Di Pasquale, that information, but I like to spread it. You're rhyming now with Israel, and it's your best track you've ever done, and it works, you know? Feel free, I guess. But that said, to get back on topic, wasted. It's cool. you know, it paints the picture of someone getting wasted. Like, starts high, goes low. Right?
Oh, man. Jonathan, that description is epic and true.
Yeah. In whatever way you get wasted.
Please.
And what about the lyrics here?
You're killing Hattie, by the way.
Yeah, that's good. That's good that you're having a good time. I like that. But I was going to ask you, you're doing a lot of lyrical analysis on this show, and you always do it well. So the first verse here, without looking at the big picture of the song, like if you just had this very first verse, what would you say it's about? Oh, that isolated.
Okay, so just this part would paint the picture of like how a person who is, an artist who is so engrossed in her craft, apparently, that, you know, they like lose their touch with reality because when you are creating art and at points you are indulging in things that make you create art and all that, and it kind of gets a blinding that how the reality is affecting or how you what state you are in. And that's how that last line says, but soon she found he was underground and wasted, like she
Yeah,
didn't
that's the
even see
twist.
it coming.
Yeah, that's the thing, because I noticed this first four lines now, actually, while recording, that they're already pretty much a story set up. Because, yeah, it's interesting. We just talked about Dolly Parton, not connected, but he did hear a proud lady sing loud, which I'm sure Parton can do. And I heard a human's voice is the first one, right? And then it's specified in the second row. Like, you get some specific of this human voice that sang like no one else. And then you get some character traits too in the third row. Lived her life as she liked, didn't give a damn. And that's not really Dolly Parton. She's been pretty sustainable, but you can look at Amy Winehouse, for example, that
Well,
probably
there
did a
were
bit of that.
many.
There are many examples, most of them male, but a good plethora of female too over the years that did not really.
Joplin.
Yeah, it's a great example. Yeah, that was a lot of Southern Comfort. I think she drank herself to death on the Southern Comfort bourbon. Is that bourbon, George? I don't know. Some sherry liquor, sweet. Someone like her in the third row lived her life as she liked, didn't give a damn. So it's a story about a rock star in that sense. This lady is a bit of a
Right.
rock star. Even if she's not playing rock, she's living that lifestyle, right? And
The
then she
fourth line
found
comes in,
she
bam,
was.
and
That's
flips
the
the
twist,
script.
right? So you get a twist already on the fourth line. Again, the first line was the general image. Second row clarified details of the image. Third row, you already get character traits. And fourth row, you get the twist or the tragic faith, I guess, tragic fate of this person. But soon she was found underground and wasted. And I know there's been plenty of portraits of this. South Park did a great episode of all about Britney Spears' Fall Down and how, a talented young lady has to get sacrificed in some way, ritually, which is, of course, a very bleak look at it, but we've seen plenty of it over the years. Of course, young men too, but there's a lot of like young fame is tough, I think. It's really hard to handle. I'm sure glad I never had to figure out if I could or not, So I think it's about that in the first verse, that is.
Yeah, I think you're on target. And I want to add the reason that the fourth line, the underground and wasted part, the reason that comes in as such a twist is because the first three lines, they sound kind of positive and triumphant. Live life as you like, don't give a damn, proud lady singing loud. It sounds like it's going to be an uplifting story. And then, oh
It's
no, it's
like
not.
this, and woo.
I would say like the first two lines, definitely 100% uplifting and positive. I would say the third line ambiguous. So there's a transition there lyrically, because the third line, depending on who reads that, you can look at it either as a good thing or a bad thing. And the third line and fourth line, obviously, most people would deem a bad thing. So there is a little transition there. It's a very good first verse, to be honest. Like it's a complete story already in very minimal time. It's less than a tweet.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's even more.
Of course, there is. I mean, this wouldn't be enough, though, would it? It's just a very cool, it's a cool endeavor for four rows, I would say. Like, very few people can do that much in four rows. I can think of like Van Sant in Led in Lynyrd Skynyrd. He could do that. I can't think of many else. Maybe Springsteen. So yeah, good work.
Good work, Rob. You heard it here from Jonathan.
Yeah, Rob is okay.
I don't know if you know who Jonathan is, but if you're listening, Rob, he's a fan. So
Oh
are we,
yeah.
by the way.
Yeah,
You
Rob,
already
you're the
know.
best.
Yeah, we are.
All right. Well, verse number two coming in hot. Okay.
And he just keeps hitting it, doesn't he? Like, it's such an entertaining singer, I have to say. Like, I
Great
didn't think about this
lyrics.
preparing. I didn't think that much about the entertainment value in Rob's voicing alone. No lyrics concern, no music concern. It's a pretty fun listen. You know, he just goes, he has all these character traits that he can pull in, and there's so many of them, so you never get bored. He's like singing loud and then wasted, and then as the second verse just hits right in afterwards, there's nothing really in between them. They just keep rocking, and but he's changed. Every line is unique in the delivery, and that's why he's a big thing. You know, the entertainment value is so big.
Mm-hmm. He's I couldn't have said that any better.
Yeah, like all-rounding performer he is. Like, he would not just sing with his voice, he'd sing with his like whole body and more. Like, would bring bikes, would do this, the hunters, that's like what else he has, like everything. He just makes it an act that he is music.
And it's fun you call it an act, because it is, right? But it feels so natural, doesn't it? Like, everything he's doing is like, he's got that right ready to pull out. And he's not even thinking that much about it before. I mean, I'm a fan of improvising myself, largely because I'm not so good at planning. So it's better to work on my improvisation then. And so I see it when I, you know, when I experience someone that is good at that, this is not put on paper before. The lyrics are, but not like how he's going to do those different type of characters. He's the lion suddenly, or wasted, and all that. It's, I think it comes to him real time when I hear it, and it's very pleasing to hear. You know, very pleasing to be subject to that, really. You know, it's somehow it's a lot of brilliance in a short time when it comes to Halford, I think.
Yeah. He is making this song, and like you said, nice groove to the riff, great drumming by Les Binks, but if you have to pick an MVP on this team, like, it's Halford today for this song.
Oh, yeah. Well, the backing is pretty anonymous, really. But it's great, kind of anonymous, you know. Not everything should be a peacock, you know, wearing multicolor
feathers
that are longer than your face. You know, not everyone should do that. But if, you know, Rob is a pretty good pick if someone should, I think.
There's and of course,
in Priest, you know, they go in and out in Priest. Like, any band, any five piece has to. If you're a five piece, you can't just, you know, all guns blazing all the time. Maybe then it'll sound like Dragon Force or something, which I don't like, you know.
Or you get Dream Theater, but even Dream Theater gives everyone
okay.
a separate chance.
They're okay. They're okay, but I mean, they're nothing compared to the old guard of prog. Not at all.
The song has a nice push and pull in the rhythm, in Rob's delivery. Yeah. And I think the lyrics contribute to that push and pull.
It
says stuff like give and take, maybe took too much. And he is creating a duality in the story. If you take the smooth, you got to take the rough. And if you're a rock star, then it's a bumpy ride. No one has a smooth path to the top.
If you look at this, this is something I figured. It's very good, George, by the way, that you display these for our eyes as we record, because I notice things that I would never notice otherwise. And one thing is that the four rows of the first paragraph, and you look at the four rows of the second paragraph, they kind of respond to each row on the first. So if you begin at the end, but soon she found she was underground and wasted, and then you get, if you take the smooth, you gotta take the rough. So that's about, you know, yeah, the good and the bad.
The duality.
The duality in this case in doing the living the stage life. And if you look at the third row, lived her life as she liked, didn't give a damn. And third row here, she screamed and quaked, give and take, maybe took too much. Suddenly she's giving a damn. Or at least it's talking about how her life is. Or
the
how
consequences.
The consequences of living like that. And if you look at the second row, her body shook. Oh, she did her stuff. And then the second row, the first one is saying that lady. And that's something I guess a lot of men like to see. A lady that is doing her stuff and her body is shaking. I wouldn't mind for sure. It's good stuff. And then if you look at the first row, I heard a human voice who sang like no one else. And then I watched her hitting notes as she strutted the stage. They work perfectly together, actually, as rows together.
There's very much a coherence and a cohesion to these lyrics, especially when you compare verse to verse. And
it's
then
genius.
We're skipping ahead a second, but then you get to the third verse and it starts with I heard again, just like the first verse.
Yeah, right. It's good. It's good. I would never have discovered how good this was unless I did this show with you now. Like, I knew it was good, but you gotta look into the details sometimes.
Like, the
Oh,
writings of Judas Priest songs are often so thoughtful and, like, well articulated. It's a gem. Like, if you are not even listening, you're just waiting, it's a beautiful poetry.
That's why we do this, because Priest is that band where if you dig in, you just find more and more to love.
Also, I'm glad, like, I thank my past self for picking this song, because it's none of my love for it is, like, concerning things that I would typically rave on about, like super cool drums or super experimental arrangement or killer guitarist or anything. This song, for me, is more song-songy, which I think is closer to how a normal person listens to music. So I'm glad I picked it in that way, you know. It's the full holistic thing.
I'm glad. So, in honor of that, we got to listen to more of the song. What do you think about that chorus?
Yeah, it's really cool. Was it in a verse or chorus there? Then another, like,
one
super
so
entertaining
strong, vocal.
so entertaining. Hattie, you go first on the chorus, though. What do you think about it?
Well, the chorus part, like, you know, it is a very interesting take, and I kind of believe it, that the heroism is something that's taken, like, very, you know, it's a overrated term, and people only become heroes when they are, like, accomplishing something, and at some level they are kind of, you know, depriving themselves of something as well. Then they became that quote unquote heroes, the legends, like, and sometimes, like, as they say, like, why do you have to die to be a hero? So sometimes it also takes a toll on your whole existence. Like, for example, we have made what's his name, Van Gogh, a hero. Why? Because his paintings became famous even though he lived a miserable life. Like,
he had a shit life, I think.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, the people who have suffered while being amazing, like Amy Winehouse, or like Kurt Cobain, or Jimi Hendrix, everyone. Like, these people were amazing at their work, but at the same time, they were also, like, being deprived of a healthy life, that and their way of life kind of costed their own life as well, while they became quote-unquote legends. So what is the point of that, and why it, and how it is a very weird, or at least less than favorable concept? That is what this chorus is about. And in the first four verses, we see, I mean, the other verses, that that's how the story of both these people went. The person was with the guitar, or the lady with the voice, they all had amazing talent. They all gave all they had to their work of art, and they God appreciated for their hard work, but also they had to reach there, they had to sacrifice themselves.
Right, yeah. It's really good input on this. And as I'm looking at it, I can see that the second two verse paragraphs work like the first two, that you can actually find a bit of call and response. I mean, maybe not 100% tight as such, but there's some promises of that. It still works in that way, and I like that. It's pretty cool. I don't think that's present in many heavy metal lyrics, that you can makes, you know, you can rearrange the actual rows in your head, and it works. Like, the fourth row of the third paragraph here as you merge the power surge together. And then you get the fourth of the fourth paragraph. But one so strong ties back to power or become weak. You know, so that's it's
duality
pretty,
again.
Pretty genius stuff, really. It's pretty genius stuff. And if you look at the actual chorus, it's understated, I would say, compared to a lot of anthemic choruses. It's maybe the most Megadeth sounding bit of it. I'm not sure where they put the lead guitar fills, if that was verse or in the chorus, but that's also very Megadeth, right?
Those fills were in between the verses. And that's also a very Judas Priest thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, because what do you mean I don't believe in God? I talk to people every day. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah. Love it.
You know, a funny thing, like there is a local thrash metal band that won some reality TV contest. They are named Power Surge. And they have also said that they are heavily inspired by Megadeth, but they took the name from this song, like here, you know, the mention of Power Surge here. Yeah. Like they kind of was inspired by that to name their band.
There's obscure pick.
From George's country, there's Power Trip, right? But the
we have Power Trip.
The singer died, right?
Yeah, Riley Gale, rest in peace.
It was a pretty cool band. It was a pretty cool band.
Yeah. They rocked.
Swing of the Act.
Power Surge from Bangladesh?
Yeah.
You could include a clip for that.
Thrash metal band.
If I can find I will.
There's a lot of thrash metal in Asia.
South Asia, there are.
A lot of it. A lot of it. You have in Indonesia quite a bit too. Malaysia for sure.
Malaysia and Indonesia
metal
scene is huge.
It's huge. I met a lot of metalheads in Malaysia and, of course, Singapore as well. It's also more Western, so you can have higher budgets on the shows and all of that stuff, but it's very alive. And in Thailand, I saw a lot of really, really, really talented metal musicians as well. So I'm sure it's all over the place, all over Asia, really. We have a guest that's been on with us for, I think, 3 episodes on Midnight to Sea, and she's in Iran. So she's Persian, the middle of the continent. And there it's kind of illegal to do.
Yeah.
They still do it, though. That's the point. They still do it. So there's a lot of metalheads in Asia.
That's metal as fuck.
Literally. Like, I was, like, talking about that, like, the day we were doing No Surrender. Or right. Which one were we doing? Never the Heroes. Like I was talking about that, how Iran is so oppressive, but people still are fighting back and doing what they did. Because Persians or Iran has a very rich cultural history.
Persians are awesome. They're awesome. Like it's one of the biggest.
They're also the Aryans. So they have caused havoc in culture in every single parts of the world. So, but that's a different thing. But
that's a different thing. I never understood that thing, but I've heard it mentioned for many patches of land, like also in North India. I heard about that, but I never really understood it. And it's kind of a minefield. So I'm not working on understanding it either.
Yeah, so it's from that part, like around that place where Persia is right now. I mean, Iran is right now. So
the Persians are awesome, and she's a cool guest. And it was in the middle of this revolution that it's a lot of it in Sweden anyway. I don't know in your news media if it's covering a lot, but it's covered a lot in Europe. And in the middle of this, she was on talking about a British heavy metal band for a couple of hours and not really fazed about it. But I mean, she's pretty tough, so it could be her personality as well. Yeah, it is. And it could be her personality, but I'm generally impressed with Persians. And that's not like a political thing. It's just that I've seen them be pretty cool and pretty talented, you know, strong.
And they're relentless. Like, you know, girls are being poisoned in school cafeterias because some extremists are thinking that women should not go to school.
I didn't know about the poisoning. I knew about the things, but that's horrible. Yeah.
That's the most recent. Even the such oppressive government is also concerned about that. Like the people who kill people just because they can. They are also concerned that this isn't even okay in their standards. So it's huge.
It is huge. And I like that you said that, not even in their standards, because there's always a worse standard.
You know,
it can always get worse. It really can. Yeah, but I mean, this song has a lot of that in it. In a microcosmos, it has a lot of that in it. It really has, like, there's a lot of dichotomy, as you dropped before. That's a good word for this, because it's the talent, but it's also the ill fate. It's a burden. You know, it's the ill fate that follows it, really. Like, maybe would never have gotten there. Either the man with electric guitar or the lady with the great voice, maybe both of them would have been fine, unless their talent brought them into despair. So it's a very bittersweet, which is always the best to have also, this best feeling.
Yeah, I hear a very personal story in these verses. I heard a human voice, a proud lady.
It's very attentive. It's very attentive, right, George? He's looking at the person
about,
for sure.
Yeah, it's about cool. Individual.
And there are song, more, and I love it. That's why.
I think this song and these lyrics, they were written with particular people in mind. Not to tip my hand, we'll get onto that once we've gotten through the song. There we go. That part right there, that's very dirge-like with the whole and it also brings back the spacing in between the music, the whole dun 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 dun, and it gives each of the different lines in that verse some time apart from each other to really breathe, and it makes each line all the more powerful because of that.
It's super cool.
It creates impact.
Yeah, I mean, you get that solo, which is a badass solo, but not really my focus. I think the solo is more of a palate cleanser before you get into that whole chomp, 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 which is almost like a ritual part. You know, it sounds like a ritual, like some peeps gather around a fire. It's like a chomp, 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 and subdued.
Viking-esque.
While subdued, even more powerful than the old rocking verses. You listen even closer, like chump, 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 chump. It has shamanistic qualities, I think. These verses, I really dig them. Haven't looked into the lyrics. This is just about the music. But I'm ready to look at the lyrics.
Lyrics are rather complex or interesting.
Yeah. It actually contradicts what I said about this being a very personal story. Well, it was in the verses.
Yeah, maybe he's zooming out now, right?
Yeah, they're zooming out. If you gaze across timeless years, you'll find them always there. So the two people from the earlier verses, those are just two examples of this story. The story is as old as time, and the message is enforced how people like Van Gogh, like Jimi Hendrix, and so many others throughout history, they
are Prometheus, God.
Yes. Jesus is that kind of character too, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. They're appreciated far more after their death.
Even I'm going to ask you guys, I want to hear, but even I don't want to be that person, but when I see someone died recently, Jeff Beck, I go and listen more. You know, I mean, like, of course, I'm not ashamed of listening to their stuff, but I'm a little bit like, why do I do that now? It's just because it's big news, right? Like, somehow it kind of, I mean, I mentioned earlier, again, I don't remember if it was pre or post recording, but I was talking about funerals and their importance. And it's kind of like that, I guess. That type of nerve hits me. It's not the sensational value of, oh my God, he's dead. It's more like, let's honor what happened during this life that is now over. Something like that.
That's exactly what it's about. It's about appreciating someone's legacy and celebrating who they were and what they did.
But it slightly makes me wish I listened more when they were alive. In most cases, you know. But both are good things. What do you think, Hattie?
Well, what can I say? I have been on both sides. Like when Chester Bennington passed away, I kind of was in an LP binge, but it is not always the same thing. Sometimes if the artist is very closer to like my preference, I kind of stop listening. So I have like a kind of fasting myself from listening to Children of Bottom since like I heard the news of.
So it's a grief thing for Alexei then, that band.
It was like not easy for me. It still isn't. I haven't been listening to much.
But if Children of Bottom and Alexei Laiho, if they would have been peripheral to you, you probably would have discovered more of their music when at the point of his demise. But since you were already involved, then it's tough. I mean, for me, what I can think of something like that is like Nico McBrain dies. It feels pretty rough, man. I don't want that to happen. Please, no. I don't want it.
Yeah, I mean, and realistically,
I'm okay with that kind of stuff. I'm okay with that.
If anyone in Judas Priest died, please don't. But if they did, I don't know. We'd have to take a break to process it.
Yeah, maybe take a break and plan like a really good tribute episode. That would be what I would do if Nico died. Like, okay, a little break, and then we do a fucking good Nico special in honor of his memory, you know. Because in that way, having a podcast is actually a good thing if some of the key people die. Because then at least you can put output, right?
Right.
And honor it.
Sort of your own funeral for them.
Yeah, exactly. Quality funerals. Right. Underrated.
Oh, boy.
You heard it from Jonathan. Funerals are what?
I mean, you could say called quality tributes or whatever. There was a good Dio tribute as well. We spoke of Glenn Hughes earlier. He did a good
thing. About Dio. Like, I was on a Dio fast as well when I heard the news.
You were, okay, so that's cool, because that was different for me. I was already, like, I knew already, I had seen him live as well a few times, not knowing that I was super lucky to do so. But I mostly realized, like, shit, I'm in luck. I saw this guy live 3 times. That was the feeling
when he died. His last concert, it was not recorded. I think something happened. So, like, their only recording of it that actually exists is a fan recording. And Wendy kind of, like, thanked the fan who, like, took the video of it.
But, I mean, it's like the reverse of those earliest recordings, the earliest shows, that you only have a fan recording. So it's like kind of tying the circle together in that sense. But wasn't some of the Heaven and Hell stuff pretty late in his life? Like the Heaven and Hell Backen and Heaven and Hell Radio City Music Hall. By the way, one of the best music DVDs or live recordings ever done by anyone or any team is Radio City Music Hall with Heaven and Hell. It's really good.
Really good,
You'll thank me later. It's so good. So rest in peace, Dio.
And speaking of things that are good, I think it's about time to hear a little more of Heroes End.
Okay, then.
Yes, please. Okay, so this is also another story of another person, their rise and fall. But the verses before that kind of had me hooked on for a while. Like, if you gaze across timeless years, you'll find them always there. And many gods will join the list compiled with dying here. Like,
that's what George was talking about, right? With the zooming out.
Yeah.
Like the story as old as time. Yeah. But do continue.
It's everywhere. And the last two lines in that verse, like hungry mouths are waiting to be waiting to bite the hand that feeds, and so the living dead carry on immortal deeds. Like how these Jesus. People who are amazing, like as you say, Jesus Christ or Prometheus or these all people, like people that are benefited from these people, they always get back and harm them again. So, like, it is the work of art or the work of lifeless, selfless acts. They kind of, even though self-fulfilling or whatever for them, like, people take it for granted all the time.
And they like to make fun of them, right? That's interesting.
Like, you were a weirdo.
Like to see them like, he wasn't so good after all. She wasn't so good after all. Like, I would have done better there. I wouldn't have been as tempted. I wouldn't have, getting into that bad of a crowd. So it's a part of it that is like hungry mouths are waiting to bite the hand that feeds, meaning that they actually want to kill this artist. They want to see
while
them.
While they are listening to them in the first place or watching their performances.
And I think it's to some extent true. I mean, obviously, you didn't want to see Chester Bennington coming to his demise as a fan or Nico McBrain or anyone in Priest. But the general public, they kind of like to see the stars fall a little bit. And that's what I, alluded to with the South Park reference for Britney Spears.
Yeah.
They want to see them rise. And then they want to see them
humanized.
They want to see them fall. And that's also ties back to the very central topic of the song. Why do you have to die to be a hero? And I think that's a great message, really. Like, you have to think about it more than on surface level. Like, What is this death part about? Yeah, that's about entertaining the masses. They're like, okay, we've seen you rule. Now die. That's what it is about. You can actually be a hero for a long time, but the masses are going to get bored probably. And then you have to build your own little platform. But that's what this song is about. If I read it, I see it as that. Like, don't go looking for that public recognition, really. That's what I see in it, which is interesting, on some of the topics we'll be on. But like, it's for me, it's an anthem of building a subculture or a even less so than a subculture, something we do with this podcast, for example. It's going to live on. We're not going to suddenly die. There's not going to be much drama. It's going to be pretty much the same thing, but we don't have to die to be heroes doing this. It's stable that way. So I think it's about the public, like hitting it really big. I think that it comes right back to that. Even in these verses.
Yeah. I think there's a little more to it than just people like to see stars fall. A lot more.
But I'm not as good as Halford. Right. George, come on, give a break.
I see it a different way, how sort of some people have this fame and they don't know how to handle it. But as the saying goes, the show must go on and they have to just keep living this hard touring life. And people, musicians, they're drinking a lot, doing some drugs to cope with it. And because the public is demanding more albums, more tours, they just keep going and they're trying to please the public. And that leads to their own demise as they get into unhealthy lifestyles.
It happens on lower levels too.
So what I was trying to say is like in the chorus part, the last two lines are like of heavy significance, like how it is said, why do you have to die if you are a hero, where there are still so many things to say unsaid. Like it's an artist's biggest fear, because an artist always wants to explore, explain, and bring out messages to the mass. Like from an artist's perspective, like they want to tell stories in whichever form they're telling. And when you are on the path of becoming a hero, you are so overworked and you are so drained, you don't get to tell the stories. And there are a lot of stories that you have are left unsaid. And that's a very not appreciable thing. Like, you were a creator, you were an artist, and you were supposed to do that. You were supposed to be making art. You were supposed to have a life of yourself, not just working too hard, too fast, and burn out.
It's a great point. It's a great point. Probably my favorite bit about the traveling years. I don't travel that much anymore. It's practically not so possible. But one of my favorite bits was that I knew there was so much I experienced along the way that I could not have found through Yeah, well, in today's language, I couldn't have found it through algorithms. A lot of talent hidden, or hidden gems we talked about before, right? A lot of that, if you travel, and it's the best stuff, usually it's locals or someone that stayed there for a long time, or at least slightly outside of the tourist the trap. You find something very interesting. And I'm not going to say they're all heroes or anything. I'm not going to say any of us are, but it's as interesting, really.
Yeah, if you look at it
closely, like the story of a life is always interesting. And there's a lot of it that is unsung, yeah, to go back to your point.
Yes.
So a lot of these lyrics are pretty dense, man. Way mm-hmm. lot to unpack sure. here.
Yeah, and there's actually something I want to point out on that note.
Right.
This fifth verse that comes in after the bridge, that's kind of weak. I almost feel like they would have been better off cutting this from the song and going straight into the chorus. And here's why, because this story of this third character who's just now being introduced is so undeveloped.
It's all in one paragraph. Yes. Also, there's no responses in between paragraphs. I agree. Yeah. Continue though.
Yeah. Just two lines dedicated to this person. Whereas the others, they got two entire lines.
Yeah. It's just two. It's not even the other two. And just the two first rows.
Yes. Yeah, very quick story. There was like
not even particularly good lines.
Drove a Ferrari into a rock wall. That's about it.
Not even particularly good lines. I saw on silver screen an actor's rise to fame, but fast car user lose.
But is that what? The real line? That's a terrible line.
Yeah.
I think it was a case of caviar and meth.
Maybe he needed some singing to be done there.
The whole song was snipped out of like the album because it was quote unquote too big. I think there were some kind of studio decisions were made like it's becoming too big. So like delete a few lines or something.
That might have been a thing.
I see it.
It could have been eight lines and then they had to cut it to four maybe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe that's a cool observation there.
It's I very could see it.
Very possible.
The song's already fairly long for Priest. It's 5 minutes.
That's
and
right.
It has and it has five verses. That's a lot of verses for a song.
Yeah. But it's the lyrics are the central point of the tune too. So
and I also think like they wanted to cover a few different kind of artists, like a vocalist, now a guitarist, I mean an instrumentalist, and then a different kind of actor. Like they wanted to tell a few stories, but like it was becoming too big. So.
Two was enough. I like two stories. They could have stayed zoomed out. So I agree with you, George.
Right.
I guess that's what I'm saying. But it doesn't take much away. I think still I've been on
this
in my other show. Like to be perfect, it doesn't have to be every row doesn't have to be good. To me, it's still a very, very, very good lyric, even if this verse may fall a little bit on its face. You know?
Yeah. And also, you had a vocalist and you had a guitarist. They were both musicians, and now you're bringing in an actor, and it doesn't even fit as well because Priest is a metal band, and
it could have been developed.
They were paying tribute to rock stars, you know.
And it indeed was a little weak and vague, like the but fast car use or lose. Like,
yeah, I started thinking about Diana actually, like Lady D, Diana, when I heard that. Because I think she died in a car when I was in grade school. So I remember that day. Something like
that. It was in August 97.
97, yeah, that makes sense. I was 10 coming
I
to
I was in second grade.
I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
You guys ready to hear a little more?
Yeah, and I wanted to say something before this bit. Pay attention not as much to the solo as to the backing guitar of this solo. And that's something I never said before.
Neat.
Okay, that's interesting.
All right, listeners. Let's open up. Hear that backing guitar inside your ear holes.
Yeah. Rock out. And now rewind. Not you, George, but the listener. Rewind and listen again, because now you paid attention to the awesome backing, but rewind, use that 30-second back button and listen again for the solo, because that's also awesome. But I you need to focus on both here. It's a pretty cool part. It stands out, but I'll say more soon.
I like that backing guitar. I think I kind of like it better than the solo.
What's not to like? It's fucking heavy, isn't it?
I think I like it more than the solo. The solo felt a little messy to me. But...
A little downing, right?
Mm-hmm. A little downing.
And squeals and, whoa, and some really nasty blues licks, like super dirty, which I like, especially for this song. It fits well. It's like that decadent vibe from The Star Going Down, like, it's a nasty solo. I'm not sure because I can't tell if it's downing or Tipton. I would say it was downing.
Like my guess was like a Tipton song, and Tipton played the backing solo, and like the main thing was downing. Like, it's
so
just
downing
my guess.
The lead, you think? Yeah. But it's a really cool riff in behind there. It's nasty. It's not part of the song either. It's a special riff. It reminds me of, actually, do you know this tune, George? Jungle Boogie by Kool and the Gang.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the title credits for Pulp Fiction. I think that's how I got to know it. But 90s, as a younger than 10, I think I was at that time. And it has that like Jungle Boogie, and it's like it's that kind of, you know, super leaning back, mega heavy riff. That, of course, they have a lot of heavy riffs, but this is a standout. The one under the solo that is so cool.
Yeah, and do you hear Dave Mustaine playing that one too?
Yeah, he would maybe chop it up a bit. Or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds good.
But also
like
the solo, man.
Outro.
The solo is so dirty. It's so dirty. It's really nasty. It's there's a lot of residue on that solo, like rust, crust, anything that could be nasty on top of another thing. It's on top of that. And I would say that's downing, but that's with limited experience, like a limited empirical research. I would say it's downing, which is interesting if it's a Tipton tune. I mean, you would expect him coming in, but sounded a
groovy
lot like
and smooth.
Sounded a lot like KK, right? Or what do you guys think?
To me, yeah. Like, I don't know what George thinks, but I think it's like downing Tipton.
Very nasty.
Got that sound.
Grimy, that. Oily. Oily as fuck. Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, and what else do you have on this song, Hattie?
Except the fact, like, the overall, this song is about the price of creativity and how creativity is taken for granted, and people only became, like, acceptable when they are, like, decaying inside.
Like, yeah, the crowd wants the full story, including the end, right? Yeah.
And another undertone I get from this whole story that we are like we like worship. We like to worship big names. We like to worship
idols,
like
right?
Giant things that's happening in front of us. Instead of like taking time, looking around and being grateful for the small things done by quote unquote not heroes or normal people. Like, they are oftentimes doing amazing things for, like, very small, very less than significant things, but these are amazing. But we don't even look at those. We just look at people. We put people on pedestal because they are talented, but we just kind of, drain them of their creativity, their energy and all that. And, you know, then we kick them off the pedestal and put a new one.
Yeah. You can't put it much better than that. Not really. That's a perfect summary of the theme, I think. Like, it's all right there. And I would say, if you're looking for these guys for entertainment, you're not even looking to them for the answers to life or anything. You're just looking for entertainment. Then your point becomes even more clear. Like, your neighbor is probably quite entertaining. Or, you know, the guy across the street or the cat in the yard outside of my window is probably quite entertaining. You have just become really numb to entertainment, and you want these big fucking stories, big heroes. They're dying or they're killing each other. Call to my neighbor country, Norway. They're dying or they're killing each other, or they, you know, they have a new wife now and they left the family, and now look at them go down. It's because you're numb to how much entertainment is out in the wild, really. Like, a cat is entertaining. I would say I like cats, though. So, I mean, I could be biased. But a dog, I like dogs maybe even more than cats. Super entertaining. So, I mean, you're not asking for a dog to get hooked on heroin and die.
Ladies and gentlemen, please do not feed your dog heroin. He will get hooked on it and die. With just one
don't
dose.
Do it. But why do you want your heroes to do that, though? That's kind of, you know, the story. Because they're your entertainment, but somehow you want to see them die. You know, that's a pattern that keeps reappearing. And again, I'm talking about the general masses, not the, you know, the core fan base.
It's an interesting way of like looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah, but your summary, that was good. So if you forgot that, listener, go back 1 minute or two. That was the right summary of what this song is about.
So I've got a quote that I pulled out of a Martin Popoff book. The song is totally written by Gwen Tipton. Mm-hmm. And Popoff says, Gwen dedicates two quite perceptive and concise stanzas to Joplin and Hendrix
each.
And then and for the final verse, a single stanza for James Dean. And even Popoff points
Dean
out.
They got the raw Dean. They got the short stick, man.
Oh my God.
The shortest straw was pulled for Dean.
Right.
Shortest straw has been pulled for Dean.
And when you said before, Jonathan, that it's dirge-like, that's also something that was pointed out here. Popoff said, it's a haunting sort of death march in the middle when they have that bridge.
Yeah,
things low
down,
and churchy.
Yeah.
So he's
dynamics
summed it
go
up
down.
Nicely. He's coming
Urgency
up with a lot
down.
Of the same. He's coming up with a lot of the same things that we came up with. And even when you get to the end, a rabid public craves the tragic tales of heroes. And I know you didn't read this book before, Jonathan, but you know, if you had, would have been on the money.
I did not read that, but I did watch South Park. Credit where credit is due.
Good enough.
Yeah, this was a great one to go through, actually. I thought, like, I mean, if you would have asked me which song, this one or This and an Aggressor, This and an Aggressor, sure. But this was way much more fun to me anyway, to dig through this one. Because This and Aggressor, everyone can hear it's fucking awesome. But this one, it gets better if you dig through it. And credits to Popoff as well. Good analysis, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. Hattie, what do you think of the song musically?
Musically, it's kind of, you know, it from the beginning, it's a little like stalled. But when it builds up, it just builds up.
It is stalled in the beginning, I agree. It's a little stalled. I think it lets loose very slowly, this tune. So it's starting with a pretty tight grip. It doesn't let loose so easily. Again, I was a bit surprised. Why did I pick this? And I honestly don't remember why I picked it. I must have been in a very happy state and just, you know, had it on the turntable probably, because I listened to this album usually on the turntable and must have been like, oh, okay, shit, this is awesome. I'm going to write George. And then I've forgotten that state of mind, which involved maybe some inebriations of sorts. I've forgotten it. I had to rediscover, why do I want to do this song? I even thought for a minute, like, could I switch songs last minute? No, I don't want to be. I don't want to be a bother. But now I'm super happy I went through with it. But I don't know why I picked it, but I'm very glad I did. It's a cool song. This is maybe a bit of a hidden gem, isn't it? Like, it's not so in your face. Great. You have if you dig in it, it's much better. It's more of in the dirt, great.
And that's what a gem is. It's buried in the ground. Now,
yeah,
I've said before, I think Rob Halford can take an okay song and elevate it and make it great. And this is a prime example because musically,
yes.
I think this one's just okay. You know, I do like the guitar riff. It has a nice groove to it. And I like the bridge, the whole chugging dun. Dun, dun,
oh, yeah, cool. But that's actually, yeah. You know, more in support of the vocal to stay on your point there. It's still like the vocal is
sure.
The thing.
Yeah.
But this, I guess that goes for most of the song, that the instruments are not playing lead role here.
Rob's the MVP of this one. Like I said, awesome lyrics, awesome vocals, and the music just kind of is there in place to serve it.
Also, the music never steps in on top of the vocals, which is a feat of its own. Believe me, I've been in bands or I produced bands where, like, you can't do these guys. you're completely shitting on the vocal line here by what you're doing in the backing or whatnot, whatever you're doing. Like a drummer can do this, a bassist can do this, a guitarist can certainly do this. I am one and I know one. You know, it takes a clown to know one. The guitarist can certainly step in right above the vocals, which is to no one's liking, but maybe his mom, you know. So don't do that.
Laugh so hard into this recording.
Addy, you and John are hitting it off.
It's been a good time. Yes, it's been a good time.
I guess so.
We have had a good time. We've had a good time and we've had a long time. I'm going to have to edit some stuff down, I'm sure, but we got so much interesting discussion out of you, John. And the same was true for Dissonant Aggressor when we did that an age ago. So thank you for contributing all those thoughts that you got rolling around in your head to our show for everyone to listen to.
Thank you. Yeah, I know no other way to do it. So either you like it or you don't. But yeah, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, well, I know I do. You know that I've listened to Maiden A to Z, and I listened to So Far, So Pod, So What as well. So obviously, I'm a fan of what you're doing. Keep up the great work. And hey, you listeners should definitely check out Jonathan's podcasts as well. I'm even on.
And the other ones on the network for sure. Check them out too. I mean, I don't know your taste. I don't know who you are exactly, right, listener? So check out the shows. I mean, there's definitely something in there for you.
Yes, the Deep Dive Podcast Network. It's got a little bit of something for every rock fan. They've got shows about Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, Alien, and me and Addy even have the chance to be a guest on a few of those shows. Including
on them as well, you know, one by one. It's fun.
It was super fun, the Christmas fun.
That's all the heavy metal chatter we've got for this episode of Judas Priestcast. So until next time,
keep defending the faith.
And skull from the north.